Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to Mental Illness Matters Radio, where we take some time every single week to talk to different advocates and people who live successfully with mental illness. Not only that, but organizations that they're doing their part to spread awareness and reduce stigma surrounding mental illness. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and I'm your host, broadcasting live from the beautiful town of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. I'm telling you, there is nothing cooler than be able to do a podcast while I'm sitting in a hotel room staring at a beautiful snow-filled mountain. Now, it probably would be better if I was on the mountain skiing. However, I am glad to be here with you today. I'm excited about the topic that we have, waiting for my caller to call in, and we'll get going on that. But first, I wanted to talk to you about becoming a supporter of Mental Illness Matters Radio. How you can do that is you can contribute anything from $1 per episode up. This is a fully listener-supported show, meaning the people that contribute to my show, which is it can be $4 a month or whatever you want, they are the ones putting in the time and effort to show their support for stigma reduction and awareness for mental illness and mental health. How you can do that is you can go to www.patreon.com, patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. On there, you can find videos, story about me. You can find all the episodes, and there you can make your contribution to be a supporter of the show. I could not do it without you, and I'm so thankful for all the support. It just goes to show me that there are so many people out there wanting to end the stigma, and that just makes me happy. Speaking of ending the stigma, today on our show, we are going to have a pretty organic conversation, meaning my guests and I haven't really talked at all about how the conversation is going to go, and I think that is that's probably how we both wanted it, because this is a topic of concern and a topic of intrigue for a lot of us that are OCD advocates, sufferers, and those of us that are in recovery from OCD. I'm going to go ahead and bring her on. Hold on 1 second. Miss Allison Dodson is an advocate who is also an author of Being Me with OCD. She is a speaker typically at the International OCD Foundation conferences, and also is the, correct me if I'm wrong, Allison, but the president of the OCD chapter in Minneapolis. Is that right?
That's right.
Yay! Well, welcome to the show, Allison.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to hear your voice. Always great to be in cahoots with you and advocacy and all the things that we're doing to help spread awareness and, you know, help show people that you can live successfully with OCD, even with the horribly intrusive thoughts you and I have endured amongst the years of suffering with OCD.
Oh, yes. It is possible. It takes time. It is possible.
Well, first, before we kind of dive into the topic for today, Allison, if you would want to take some time to tell people, you know, quickly about your story or, you know, where you have come with your advocacy and where you're going with it, that'd be great.
Sure. I have had OCD probably since I was a child. I just didn't realize it until I was in my 20s, which seems to be such a typical story. And is partly why I am trying to raise awareness of OCD, is that too many people have no idea what it is, even when they have it. So once I was diagnosed at age 26, 27, I started looking back, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if that kind of thing when I was like 7, if that was OCD and if that was OCD. And I started kind of piecing everything together. It actually made me feel better a little bit to be like, oh, there was an explanation for all of that. And there was a reason I didn't always feel like everybody else around me. As a child, I had obsessions that were really about myself, about harm coming to myself. And I was highly suggestible. I think a lot of us with OCD are. It's like you hear one horrid story and you're like, oh my God, that's my life. That's going to happen to me. So, and I was an avid reader. So I would read a Judy Blume book that would talk about, like, you know, for example, the girl has scoliosis. And I would think, oh my gosh, I bet I have scoliosis. you know, really obsessed about, is my spine straight? Am I going to have to wear a brace? All these different things. So in my childhood, I thought I had brain cancer, breast cancer, scoliosis, that I was going to die in a fire. Actually, not die in a fire, just be in a fire but survive and then have to have all the burns and all the all that terrible stuff after. And then later, more like middle school age, that's when I started having HOCD, which is homosexuality OCD, where I thought, I think I'm gay, but I don't really think I am. Like, I think I like boys, but why am I having these thoughts about girls? Then later it was religious OCD, and even later than that, post-college years, I had POCD, which is the pedophilia OCD. So I've kind of, I would say a lot of it is what you and I call, well, and a lot of people call pure O, the really intrusive thoughts. Most of the thoughts that have really consumed me have been the taboo intrusive thoughts, and that falls under the category of sexual violence, violent or religious. I haven't actually had violent obsessions, and I almost feel like I'd prefer those. I know, like, other people be like, no, you don't. But I felt like mine were just so taboo. Like, how do you tell anybody these thoughts you're having? They're so wrong, and they're so bizarre. You just think that you're going to be judged. So that was, like, my journey with that. Once I was diagnosed, I knew pretty quickly that I was going to want to help somehow. And with a writing background and an English degree, and I, you know, I worked in proofreading for my career, I thought it would probably be something in writing. So I wrote a book. I started writing a book. And that opened so many doors for other opportunities. As you mentioned, I've spoken at a lot of the conferences, or actually two of the conferences, sorry, but I've also spoken around the Twin Cities area to support groups and at book readings, things like that. And that's how it ended up that I blogged for the OCD Foundation, how I ended up being the president of our local chapter, the local affiliate, how I ended up at the conferences. So all these things, just kind of one door opens after another, and it's been wonderful. Probably the best experiences of my life. And I do think that I'm making a difference, but as we're going to talk about today, sometimes I have my doubts and I feel guilty that, oh, my OCD must not have been bad enough because look how well I'm doing.
Right.
You know, I wrote this book and it's fine, and I blog and it's fine, and I speak and it's fine. And yeah, so I've just kind of recently come to this point where I'm starting to feel kind of weird about it all.
Before we jump into that topic, I want to clarify for listeners something that you mentioned. And I always tend to clarify this about the terminology pure O. Typically, that's what our community uses as just kind of the defining title of violent sexual, blasphemous, intrusive thoughts or taboo thoughts. And there is kind of this ongoing battle between, you know, clinicians and people who believe, well, it's not purely obsessional, so it can't be called pure O because that's misleading. And then there's the other group of people, that myself included, who were so excited to find a community of people that made me feel so much not like an alien walking around with these horrible thoughts that I didn't care what it was called. I was just so excited to identify with other people. So it's kind of an ongoing controversy, but I think that depending on who you talk to, it really only matters who embraces it and how much it makes them feel better. So
I agree. John Hirschfield, who has OCD and is a therapist and has written a couple of great books, he talks about that too, that there's not necessarily like different kinds of OCD itself, but it helps us to label our particular brand of OCD. Like, well, it's harm OCD. That just gives you an outlet to meet someone else who says, oh, I also have harm OCD. And it's kind of a good way to group people, you know, and not in a bad way, but in a positive way, where it's like, oh, we're grouping you together for, oh, you're someone I really relate to and I can understand.
Yeah, for sure. And just so you know, it's with my worst OCD fears, especially the sexual ones, I always think to myself, oh my God, I wish I could just have the violent ones. Those would be so much easier. But then when I talk to people who have violent fears, they're like, oh my God, the sexual ones would be so easy. Like Matthew Miles always says, just be careful what you wish for, because the violent ones might be just around the corner and then you'll be miserable.
Right. I know.
So we wanted to dive into the topic today because I noticed something that Allison put on Facebook or something the other day, and it definitely rung my bell a little bit, because this is a topic that's been bothering me for a long time. And I do believe that this is a normal phase and feeling to have when you have successfully been treated and managed your OCD. Allison, I love it, calls it survivor's guilt. And I love that terminology because it kind of put a great meaning for me, because I've always thought to myself as being competitive OCD, which is, you know, similar to Allison, when I went through ERP, I learned how to manage the OCD symptoms and in essence eradicated the sexual obsessions I was experiencing. However, I still have OCD thoughts all the time, you know, almost every day, intrusive thought, but because I know how to manage them, I'm lucky that they don't go to an extreme anymore the way that they used to. And so this is kind of, I think, a cycle of what people go through when they really learn to get their OCD under control. They learn what works for them and how to manage it. But then what happens is I think we get this huge distance in between the misery that we were in and now living and managing our lives, where OCD is just kind of in the background. To me, it's like a little puppet in the back that I can see every once in a while and I wave to, and that's it. Now, comparatively, I think it's, you know, if someone said, oh yeah, I tore my ACL when I was 20 years old, let me tell you about that, people will go, oh God, tearing your ACL, that has to be horrible. And, you know, let me see the x-rays. And this is how long I was out of sports and stuff like that. There's that tangible evidence versus ours, who we were so glad to get rid of it. And then when we did, it was, oh my God, I just don't even want to think about it. I want to separate myself for a while. And then coming back in as an advocate for me has been a struggle when I see people struggling and they say things like, well, I have severe OCD, not like yours. And I'm always like, well, I don't really know what classifies OCD as severe or not. However, when my OCD was unmanageable, I'm assuming a suicide attempt and a hospitalization is probably pretty severe. I don't know. It depends on
people's
definition of what it was. But I, too, have felt this weird feeling of, well, maybe mine wasn't so bad, and why am I not still suffering? And does that mean, and it actually has before sent me in a downward spiral with my OCD symptoms, with the secondary fear of maybe I never had OCD, I just made it all up, or I'm just dramatic. What do you think, Allison?
Oh, I totally agree. And I'll say this too, you mentioned ERP. Well, this is a huge guilt thing for me. As you probably remember, Chrissy, I didn't do ERP with a therapist, and that is a really big driving factor in me feeling guilt that, well, it must not have been that bad because I didn't even need a therapist to help me through it. I did ERP on my own. Like, I got books and I went through the steps, and I often call it ERP in real life, where I didn't always, you know, necessarily do a script to help me through something. It was like, I'm going to face that fear organically. I'm going to go to the grocery store, even though I'm afraid of seeing kids there. I'm going to hold my nephew, even though I'm really afraid of it. And it's something in the community, ERP is the gold star treatment, absolutely. And it's, you know, the most highly recommended thing. And I'm like, oh, well, I didn't do that, but I did have OCD and it was bad and I'm okay now. Like, I feel like it's like, oh, sure it was. And it's almost like I feel like I'm a fraud. I know I'm not. But that those fears and those doubts go through my head. And I got a lot of relief from medication. And
right.
I'm still on medication. I've been on medication for a decade now. And I don't know if I'm going to ever go off of it. But I've had people say, you know, like I did a presentation at the conference last summer about my taboo intrusive thoughts. And when I got the feedback from the audience members, someone said that it was really medication focused. And I'm like, really? Was it?
Huh.
Because I don't remember talking about medication that much. I mean, overall, the feedback was good. But it's just kind of, I guess, I don't know. I feel like sometimes medication is discounted as being like, oh, well, you can't just medicate yourself out of it or whatever. And I don't really think that's what it does for someone with OCD. But it for me, it enabled me to keep pushing in my own life. Like it took away so much anxiety and the depression and all those things that I think were holding me back and helped me
mm-hmm.
push through those fears on my own without someone helping me. But I didn't go through residential treatment. I've never been hospitalized. And the more I hear people telling me this, they're like, oh, I just got out of Rogers, which is a residential treatment in Wisconsin. Like, I know I feel like I'm not up to their standards as far as all the struggling. But I have to remember that I struggled for decades before I was diagnosed and got help.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Right. Well,
but
I'm here to tell you that medication saved my life. So anybody who discounts medication, I want to sit down and have a conversation with them because
yes.
That was the initial, when I was so, so sick, coming out of the psychiatric hospital and it really was mostly my symptoms of depression. I have,
mm-hmm.
I often think when things get the worst for me, it's more a depression from the exhaustion of the OCD. And so
mm-hmm.
if it weren't for medication, I don't really know how I would have survived. And so hey, more power to anybody, whatever you do to manage your symptoms and to make your life, you know, your quality of life better with OCD, with depression, whatever. I think that is the main point and what we should explore this show is it isn't about whose is worse and whose is easier and anything. It is about people's different journeys and people are at different places in their lives. And you know, how can we come to a greater understanding of that within the community of sufferers with OCD?
Absolutely. I wrote a blog post recently for the International OCD Foundation, and it was about following your own instincts and doing what's right for you. And that kind of stemmed from an experience I had recently, too, was I met with a young man who also has POCD, and he was pretty miserable from it. And when we talked, it was like, well, he was so happy to meet someone else who has this, and, you know, and I'm better now, and it was kind of an inspiration to him, but then he asked about ERP and I said, well, you know, I didn't do it with someone, but I'm not telling you that you shouldn't. Everybody's different and
mm-hmm.
to look to someone, you know, in the advocacy community and say, well, so-and-so did this, so I should be able to do it too. It's a fallacy. We all have similar
right.
brains, of course, because we have OCD, but they're still different brains. Who knows what different what variables are going into it. I didn't drink when I started on my medication and was doing all this. I swore off alcohol for a long time. Some people are trying to get better and they're drinking or they're doing drugs or, you know, there's some, and maybe they have
mm-hmm.
a comorbidity where they also have bipolar or anything like that. So it really is listening to your own voice, listening to your instincts, listening to the professionals in your life and your family members who maybe sometimes can see things better than you can because they're seeing it from the outside and not thinking that it's always the easy way out or there's only one right way of doing it.
Right. I also think it's important to keep in mind, a couple different analogies came to my mind, but the first one is, you know, no one-way trick to treating cancer for people. It's, you know, some people will have breast cancer and it's, you know, chemotherapy may work or radiation may work or whatever you need to do at whatever stage of cancer you're at. But I don't necessarily see people in that realm of a physical illness saying, well, mine is just worse than yours. And I think, you know, what I want to say about that is I think that that doesn't necessarily stem from people being competitive or being, you know, condescending. I do think it stems from the amount of desperation people feel when they are so entrenched in their symptoms. That they're desperate for relief. I know, Allison, you've probably felt this way. I have felt this way where it just, you know, long nights where you just think, I cannot escape this. I would do anything for relief. What can I do to get relief? And a lot of times with the access to information that we have, the access to talking to people now, which we didn't really have back in the day, you know, pretty immediately messaging advocates and being able to contact people quickly. A lot of times people are, well, you have OCD. Tell me how I can find relief right this second because I need help right now. And as we all know with any sort of illness, mental, physical, you know, it's not that, but we need it and want it so badly when it's with OCD. And so I do think, that's one of the driving factors to it, is it isn't malicious and it isn't condescending, but what it is just this adamant need immediately for relief. We can't, a lot of times, well, I mean, people can take pills, anti-anxiety pills to relieve the symptoms, but, you know, there isn't always just some pill that's going to make it go away and have us kick our heels up at the end of the day and go, okay, well, that was a tough day. Now I'm going to chill out. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And no, I don't think it's from a malicious place or a truly competitive place. I think that when someone says my OCD is worse than yours, I think a lot of times what they're saying is my thoughts are really terrible. And it's almost like it's a, I don't know, like a barrier they're putting up, kind of a shield, like, well, mine are really bad. Don't make me say them to you. Or I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that they're also afraid that they're not going to get help because they're like, well, maybe you did, but your thoughts were only this or that. Mine are X, Y, Z, and how am I ever going to get better? It's kind of, I don't know if they're looking for reassurance that will say, yeah, you can. You don't think my thoughts are horrible? Well, I did. And I think what they're coming from too is, of course, you think yours is the worst because it's happening to you.
Yeah.
It's my thought. It's my brain. It's my life. It feels terrible to me because it's happening to me. We had Jeff Bell, who he's the author of a couple of great OCD books and a spokesman for the OCD Foundation. He came to speak at an OCD Twin Cities event a couple of years ago. And so he tells his whole story and everything he went through, like all the wrong therapy he had, and just, you know, he had a really long go of it. It took a long time to figure everything out, and just a really inspiring story. And then afterward, a woman came up to him and she said, oh, I have OCD too. She was, but mine is worse than yours. It's like,
it's
so common. It's so common that everybody really thinks that. I don't know.
Well, and I also think that you're right when a lot of it has to do with the content of thought, and it also can be, I think, related to what we're just talking about. Like sometimes we look at other people's symptoms and think, oh my God, if only I could wash my hands. I mean, that would be so easy. Seriously. But at the same time, OCD is hell on earth for anybody, and it isn't about. I think the main thing for me is it to keep in mind, it isn't about the actual obsession. Anxiety is universal. I mean, when you're in that heightened anxiety where it's so demanding that your world stops,
you almost are, I can barely function because I have to take care of this anxiety. That is mm-hmm. the piece that is universal for all of us. And what, you know, what we really have to keep in mind, and figure out a way to kind of pull it back and bring it to, hey, this isn't about the obsession. Your obsessions may seem worse than mine, and they may be, you know, they may be, you know, running your brain in circles right now, like around a track. However, it's not the obsession, it's the actual anxiety. Now, Allison, I shared this with you, and I'm going to share this on the show now. I didn't really understand that a lot of other people felt this way. I thought that I was an anomaly, which meant that, you know, maybe it's true that my OCD wasn't as bad as everybody else's. The secondary fear that I have, which is maybe you didn't have OCD, you really just were crazy and dramatic. Until I started working as an OCD coach and working with different people, and every single person that I've ever worked with has expressed the same fear, which is, well, maybe my OCD just isn't as bad as other people's, or maybe mine isn't treatable like other people's. I think I shared this with you, Allison, I was working with a girl who, in her symptoms at her worst, could not leave the house, was in the bathroom for up to 18 hours a day, and just the quality of her life was just so horrible because her symptoms had virtually taken over every single aspect. And she, as I'm sharing my story with her, you know, which 18 years ago, you know, when I attempted suicide, I was in the psychiatric hospital and then got out and was diagnosed with OCD, she was like, well, I mean, I guess your OCD just must be worse than mine, because I've always worried that because I never attempted suicide, that my OCD wasn't that bad. And I was like, what? I was like, you've been in the bathroom for 18 hours. Maybe my OCD isn't that bad because I've never been in the bathroom for 18 hours. And it was just this aha moment for me of, wow, this is one of those things that we're all feeling. It's almost like, you know, I think that OCD has like secondary fears and third fears and fourth fears, and this is one of them, that somehow it's going to come into fruition that we don't have it that bad. We could have controlled it on our own. Mm-hmm. And it was just like this light bulb, and I was like, oh my God.
And you're right. That's something that I have learned, especially in the last several years, is we all think at some point, maybe I don't really have OCD, because the alternative would be so much worse. And that's just another fear. Like, well, OCD is treatable. There are different levels of, you know, like we've been saying, maybe some person needs to go into residential treatment for 6 months, whereas another person can just do ERP via Skype and do a lot of it on their own. But it mm-hmm. is treatable. And so when you have OCD, again, you have this other doubt, which is maybe I don't really, maybe I have something, I'm not taking the right medication, I'm not seeing the right doctor. So you could think that it's a completely different mental illness and you've been just, you know, misdiagnosed. Or you could think, like in my case, maybe I just am gay. Like, this isn't OCD, I'm gay.
Right.
And I've been living a lie. Or, you know, I really am going to hell. And I think that is something that I get over and over again. People email me, and they're always really kind of cautious about their question. Like, this is going to sound weird, but have you ever felt like maybe you don't really have OCD? And I'm like, God, yes. Like,
exactly.
Still, I do. Like, once a week, I do. I think I'll read a book, and what if I read this book and realize, oh my God, I really don't have OCD because I'm learning so much from this book? Or what if someone reads my book and says, like, oh, what she's describing is not OCD at all? I mean, it's just,
exactly.
It's a doubting disease. That's what it is. And one of the doubts is even that we don't actually have it. I always say, like, treatment isn't one size fits all. It's kind of like having skin cancer, but it's concentrated to one mole on your hand. You get it removed. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't say, you know, if you had lung cancer, you wouldn't say, like, oh, well, that person got over her cancer by having a mole removed, so that's all I'm going to do. No, that's not
right.
You need to do so much more treatment. You need to do different treatment. It might take longer, and that's okay. It's frustrating. And it's probably really scary, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't take all the steps to get there. And I think,
right,
you know, coming back to the competitive thing, I mean, maybe that's how it feels to people, is if someone has skin cancer in one mole and they say, oh, yep, I've had cancer too. I'm also a cancer survivor. I suppose the person with lung cancer will be like, what? How can you compare the two? And like you said, with OCD, mental illness, there isn't a tangible thing. So we never really can't ever really say like, well, here's the scientific proof that mine is more severe and yours isn't. Well, we don't really know that. It's all coming
right
from a personal place. And like, really, I think we just need to stick together as a community and just try to help
yes.
each other through it.
I agree. And I want to broach that topic, kind of like the severe versus the mild and how we really need to focus as a community. But I do want to emphasize something that you said about the secondary fear that we all feel. And I think that they should add that in the diagnostic criteria. If you have OCD, you're probably going to doubt that you have OCD.
Yes.
I think that would make everybody feel a lot better, but kind of as you know, to offer some positive insight and maybe a positive solution to the issue is that if in watching our language when we're talking about OCD, just the same, you know, both Alice and I are both saying like our words can trigger other people's secondary fears, and if we're all talking to people who are having these fears, it's very important as OCD sufferers and as an OCD community to be not only to be mindful of triggering someone in their OCD fears, but also triggering that secondary fear. So if that means not saying things like, well, I have severe OCD and you just didn't, or my fear is worse than yours, or even though we may think that, it's important to be mindful of saying that to other people because we need to come together as a community and support each other because we're fighting a bigger battle, which is having our OCD taken very seriously versus it being a quirky, you know, disorder that everybody thinks they want that doesn't have it. And so as a community, I really feel like it's important for us to unite and support each other and think about the bigger picture. Sorry, that sounded a little teachery or... I don't know, but I that's just like
your soapbox.
I do, Allison. We have about, we probably have like 12 minutes left. God, this went by so fast. But one of the things I wanted us to talk, 12 minutes. One of the things I wanted us to talk about quickly is the topic of mild versus severe OCD. I'll give you my thoughts on it really quick, and I'd love to hear your feedback on it. One of the things I understand is on the internet or when people are talking about OCD is they'll say, well, I have some mild OCD trait, you know, mild OCD. It'd be different if they said I have obsessive compulsive traits or have, you know, some little quirks that I feel like can relate to OCD. But when people say I have mild OCD, it's the same for me when they're saying I have severe OCD. It puts me in a position of thinking, well, why is mine different? And for my own personal recovery, I need to feel like that I am like everyone else that has OCD. We suffer with the anxiety piece of it. We hate our obsessions. We do everything we can to manage it. As a community, that's what I envision. People on the same page fighting for the same goal and supporting each other. So when people start saying things like, oh, well, I just have a little bit of a mild case of OCD, I always default to, well, maybe mine was mild. The same way when people say, well, I have a severe case, I think, well, maybe mine wasn't severe. So for me, any use of the terminology of mild to severe or whatever is triggering that secondary fear. It's my belief that OCD is OCD. I mean, that you have it or you don't, and that there are times in your life when it's worse and times in your life that it's better. I mean, Allison, I'm sure you've gone through the same thing, even pre-treatment for yourself. Which was sometimes things were horrible and sometimes they were okay and manageable. But the message that I want to get out is why are we worrying about mild versus severe? Why are we wasting time on this instead of uniting as a community and a force to support each other and move forward in like our fight to be legitimate in the grand scheme of things? So that's my tangent. What do you think, Allison?
Well, I always wonder if someone says, I have mild OCD, and I guess it depends on the context in which they say it, but I always wonder if they even have it at all.
Right.
Which isn't fair, but if it's someone like on Twitter who's like, well, I have a little bit of OCD, it's like, I don't really think you do because it's not how it works. I mean, I suppose what they could mean is I've gotten to a manageable state. I'm not in a place of suffering right now, but I still don't refer to it as mild or severe. I would just think I have OCD. I still do, but I'm not in a terrible place right now, but I have been. And I think it's difficult to, the type of OCD you and I have, I hate to say type of OCD, but the fact that we have primarily intrusive thoughts that we're not necessarily going to divulge unless there's a reason to. Mm-hmm. People who have the really obvious outward compulsions, like hand washers, might think like, well, how does she really have OCD? Or that must be an easy kind of OCD,
yes,
because she can hide it or whatever. And then on the flip side, I've sometimes thought, like, well, my OCD is bad because it's so taboo. At least you can tell someone, you know, I have a contamination phobia. Like, who's going to judge you for that? They might think you're weird, but they're not going to think you're a bad person.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter. Like you said, it's all about the anxiety it causes. It doesn't matter where it stems from. OCD is OCD. And I have felt sometimes like that there's a different level to having taboo intrusive thoughts. Doesn't make it worse necessarily, but just there might be other factors that you need to take into account when you're treating it, because it could be we're not just treating the fact that you have obsessions that you can't shake, but we also need to talk to you and say, like, you need to let go of this guilt. I think there's a different level of guilt or a different kind of guilt. There's just different factors to it. And not saying one is worse or one is better, one's easier, one's harder. It's just we go at it at a slightly different angle for the other things. It's still probably going to be ERP or medication, mindfulness, any of those things that work for OCD. But then you have to bring into, you feel really guilty because that's a really taboo thing. But I've spoken to people who have the compulsions and they're like, I'm super embarrassed to wash my hands all the time. Like, that is really embarrassing. People can see that. People see you in the bathroom or they see your raw red hands and they wonder what. So, yeah, just coming back to that, not a competition. We're all in it together. And you do need to listen to yourself. Like I said before, don't try to look to others for like the magic solution, because it's going to be probably a combination of a lot of things.
Yes. Well, that's a hard pill to swallow, I think. No medication pun intended. But I think one of the things I wanted to emphasize that you said, that I'm so glad you said it, is that, with taboo, intrusive thoughts, puro, I think it's interesting because exactly what you're saying, I think that we have a lot of unique and different challenges than most people do with OCD and horrible shame and guilt that we have to work through of why did I have these thoughts? You know, it a lot of the clinical stuff comes out of it. Oh, look, I have OCD and here are my outward compulsions. And like you can't, like for me, it's been difficult to just apply clinical reasoning to it. It's more of, yeah, but why did it have to go to this extreme of scrupulosity and sexual obsessions? Like, I would give anything for it not to be that, then I wouldn't have to deal with some sort of weird guilt inside. I wanted to comment on that, for sure. And then I also wanted to emphasize emphasize what you said about how people get to a point where they manage it. I mean, how many people, Allison, do we know in just the advocacy community that we could, if we tracked their journey to recovery, just how different it is. I mean, look at mine, look at yours, look at Shannon Shai's, you know, look at John Hirschfield, you know, so many people just went about things differently. A lot of it, you know, it can depend on culture. It can depend on where you are in your life. For some people like me, it was life or death. Like it was either you know, it was therapy or suicide. That's like, at that point in my life, that's what it was. And so everyone's journey is different. But to also emphasize that point, I'm in recovery now. I'm 38, about to turn 39. And I mean, I would say I entered recovery when I was 33, 34. That was 12 years after my diagnosis. So I hate to be like kind of a downer, but it isn't overnight. And recovery isn't going to be, you know, hey, Allison, tell me what you did and I'm going to do that tomorrow and things are going to be better. It's an individual journey that every single one of us has to go through. And there are stages and there's grief and there's eradicating shame and guilt. It is such an all-encompassing journey of emotion and stress and everything else that, you know, I just, before Allison, I let you take out the show with some final words, you know, I just wanted to say, like, I love doing the show and I want to keep this topic open because I really feel like we need to start as a community just uniting in a front, because if we don't do it together, you know, we're putting a lot of mixed messages out there about what OCD is and what OCD isn't. And we really need to unite as like a clear front of this is what it is. And these are the people that suffer. And this is how we want the world to view our community. So Allison, we have about 3 minutes left. And so I wanted to get some final thoughts from you and, you know, take us out of the show.
Thank you, Chrissy. Final thoughts. Oh man. another thing, you know, that I think people struggle with is, why did I have OCD? Why do I have OCD? And when I've been recently kind of going through this whole survivor's guilt thing where I'm like, oh, why am I so lucky to be doing well so that I can speak about it and do all this stuff? Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why I have OCD, and that I was able to recover, you know, as much as possible so that I can help other people. And I think that's one thing that we can all do. It doesn't have to be to the level that you and I do it. It doesn't have to be advocacy at all. But if you can find some meaning in your experience and say, like, gosh, it's so severe, but I can see some light from it, or if it offers you perspective. I think it's just really important to try not to dwell on whether it's severe or really compare it to other people. I think we all know.
Right.
The whole keeping up with the Joneses thing. I mean, we don't want to do that kind of thing with our OCD diagnosis. You don't want to be like, oh, well, it's just, I'll never get better because mine's the worst. I mean, that's a really,
yeah,
like, negative perspective to take on it, because it's going to hold you back. As much as you can say, it's not about the thought itself. It's about the anxiety it causes.
Yep.
This is how I'm going to treat it. I'm going to treat all the thoughts the same, no matter how terrible they feel. Maybe mine is pedophilia, which carries a lot of heaviness to it, but I'm going to treat it the same way someone else treats their contamination fear, you know, that they're going to get sick from eating out or something. It may not feel
exactly
like the same level, but you treat it the same way. And once you start looking at everybody's OCD as being like fear-based, anxiety-based, we all have obsessions, we all have compulsions, whether we realize it or not, they may be mental compulsions. We're all in this together, and we're all going to treat it in very similar ways. Like you said, it's going to be on your individual journey. It's going to be different for each person, but we're
yep.
treating a disorder that there's a reason that it falls under the umbrella of OCD, like of obsessive compulsive disorder. Because we all have
exactly
similar obsessions. They just might feel different to you. And I just encourage people to try to find the good in it. It's not always easy, but maybe you had a good day or a good hour and go from there. Be grateful for that and see what you can do from that.
Excellent. Love it. Thank you for those final words. You were listening to Allison Dotson, author of Being Me with OCD, and I am Chrissy Hodges, OCD advocate and host of here at Mental Illness Matters Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We welcome your comments and questions. Please hit me up on Facebook, Mental Illness Matters Radio, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Allison, for being a guest today. Bye now, and have a great week.